Hey, it's Jenny Nash, founder and CEO of Author Accelerator. I hear so many people tell me that book coaching sounds like their dream job and they wish they could do it, but they can't because fill in the blank. They don't have an agent. They haven't written a bestseller. They don't have a PhD. They weren't an English major. They don't know enough about the publishing industry, whatever the thing is. And I can tell you that I see people overcome these things every single day. I have a presentation on this, on imposter syndrome. It's the single biggest barrier keeping most people from saying yes to their dream job. Come check it out at bookcoaches.com/imposter. That's bookcoaches.com/imposter.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone, try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to rustle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Hey, I'm Jess Leahy, and this is the Hashtag Am Writing Podcast, the podcast where we talk about all the writing things. We talk about writing the short things, the long things, the proposals, the poetry, the queries, the novels, the long form nonfiction. We talk about all the things. Most of all, though, this is the podcast about getting the work done. And I want to add just today that sometimes that means the nuts and bolts of how you query a new agent or how you actually get gigs. And sometimes that's about the nuts and bolts of writing a book proposal. But today we're going to talk about sort of the flow of a project. Let me back up. I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and The Addiction Inoculation and a forthcoming unnamed, not sure what it's going to be yet, third book. And I have written for The Atlantic and The New York Times and The Washington Post, and all of that is sort of out there and Googleable. Who else is here with me today?
I'm Serena Bowen. I'm the author of many books of fiction, and you can find my brand new book, The 5-Year Lie, wherever books are sold, starting on May 7th. I'm so excited about that launch. I couldn't even tell you.
It's so exciting. So exciting.
And while I wait for that book to launch, I have to do other work, which is the terrifying thing and why I decided to pitch today's idea. But first, we have one more Am Writing podcaster here today.
I'm here. I'm Jenny Nash. I'm the founder and CEO of Author Accelerator and the author of 12 books in 3 genres. And I'm so happy to be talking about this topic today because it's a juicy one.
I feel like I was talking about both of you a lot last weekend. This is, by the time this comes out, it'll be a little bit further along, but I was at Mom 2.0 this past week. And I go every year, not only because Laura Mays, the founder, is a friend, but because I owe a lot to Mom 2.0. They've been, the women there really helped make The Addiction Inoculation and The Gift of Failure, but predominantly The Gift of Failure, a success. But I led a roundtable on reinvention marketing. And so Serena, you were very much on my mind. And I talked a little bit, I was mostly talking about nonfiction, but I talked a little bit about switching genres. And then a lot of the women there were working on book projects. And I was like, there's this wonderful service called Author Accelerator, and you should completely look into it. So you two were very, very much on my mind. And then in the middle of it, actually, KJ went with me. And she treated it like a little writing retreat. And she was working in the lobby and she came in at the end of one of my roundtable sessions and sat down right as someone was talking about self-pubbing her next book and had insights that were way better than mine. And so it was great. So my roundtable discussion got an extra host while KJ was there. So it worked out really, really well.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's fun. It's really fun to talk to women who are in all the different stages of writing books or maybe have written a book and are looking to pivot. You know me. I love talking about those topics. It was really, really fun. But Serena, tell our listeners what today's topic is since it was your idea.
Yeah, so this month on my to-do list, and there's only ever a couple things on my goals list for a month, and it says turn in 2 projects. And I really, as a writer, hate the end stages of everything. I find it so challenging to make all the final decisions and to own up to, like, this is the best this project is ever going to be.
Are you talking about the end of the writing parts or the locking down, like, all of your other details? Because when you do this stuff, you're also locking down, like, you know, future audio and all that other stuff. Are you talking about the text itself?
Yes, the text itself. All that other stuff, you know, we could talk about how hiring narrators is tricky, but there's nothing trickier than saying this book is done.
Done, yeah.
And it has such a different energy than the beginning of a project where you're thinking of and making opening choices about what kind of a project you want it to be, but you haven't locked yourself into anything yet. And you
right, the horizon feels, the horizon is unlimited. It could go so many ways. Yeah,
right. Exactly. So I just wanted us to talk about that grim finishing energy and how we cope with it. Because then last month, I also, the thing I finished the previous month was only a proposal. And you know, that's clearly the beginning of a project. But in order to hand in a proposal that people are going to judge you upon, that has a lot of finishing energy associated with it, too. And it's really scary because you know that writing into a project is when all the great discovery happens. So to write a proposal as if you already know everything that should happen to that sucker, it's the biggest moment for... what do you call it when you don't believe in yourself? Imposter syndrome.
When imposter syndrome.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
It, at the proposal stage of something is, wow, you know, unless you're just proposing to yourself.
Well, actually, for nonfiction, there's this added layer of the publisher understands that I haven't finished all my research. Like, I spent an entire year on the research for the addiction inoculation before I even wrote the proposal. And this next book, you know, it's going to continue during the writing, but for now, and I have to keep reminding myself, this is a sales document. This is a sales document. This is a sales document. And I don't know everything. I haven't done the interviews fully with some of the people who will be, you know, the narrative arc for some of the chapters. So you have to put some in, you know, I have to have a certain level of bravado when I'm writing this thing, and I have to have my expert voice, and I have to have my "this is why you should let me write this book" voice, while inside I'm saying, "Oh, I wish I could write this in 2 years when I really have completed all of the research for this topic," and that's just not where I am. And so there's this strange place where you have to be halfway in and halfway out. And sorry, everybody, but that's my dog barking in the other room. So. This is what you get. I had 13 people in my house yesterday. Now I still have an added. We're recording this the day after the eclipse, and I'm in the totality zone. So I had 13, a bunch of them left, but I'm still down to, I still have 5 extra people in this house. So yeah.
Wow. So I want to ask Jenny about starting and finishing projects, because she sees both ends of this thing. And I just want to know what your years of wisdom about watching people stumble through this thing has shown you about starting energy and finishing energy.
Well, the reason I love this question and the way you posed it is the acknowledgement that it's a very different thing. It's, you know, so often with writing, people talk about habits and showing up and word counts and, you know, getting the sticker for the day, and that it makes it sound like it's all the same, that the what you bring to the process is all the same. But you guys are right. The starting energy is usually filled with hope and maybe some trepidation, but there's that sense that anything's possible. And then when you get into the work and especially when you get toward the end, in many cases, it's not fun. That's when it becomes work. And a lot of people stall out at that stage because it's no longer fresh and fun and it doesn't feel great. It feels like work. And, you know, there's this myth that writing a book is all just fun, creative energy. And wouldn't it be great to live in that energy? But it's, you know, there's no other way to say it. It's just putting one foot in front of the other and trudging through. I have found
in what I observe is having some sort of accountability at that point is critical. And you're both talking about meeting deadlines. And for someone that doesn't have that, they don't have a publisher waiting or they don't have an editor asking. They have to find that push for their own selves, or they're never going to. It's so easy to say, all right, I'm not going to. That's where books die. It's, mm-hmm. you know, once you start, you've got momentum, you see your way through, but it's that finishing energy that is the thing. You know, how many people do we know that have not finished things sitting on their desktop or, you know, close to finished things? And so I think of finishing energy as the most professional energy, where that's what
pros do. Yeah, that's
a
really good way of putting it.
Right?
Yeah.
Pros know how to finish.
I think KJ, I love KJ's burn charts because she has very specific deadlines set for herself. I've talked about the fact that, in fact, I just did this. My agent is going to come back to me with my chapter summaries soon, and I promised them to her by a certain date. She didn't care, and it wasn't a real deadline, but it was once I put it out there to her and said, you can expect them by this date. And the nice thing about her is she holds me to that. She said, oh, you said you might have some, you know, chapter summaries to me by this date. And it's not like, you know, I'm not like in trouble if I don't get them in. But Lisa Demore talks about this in her book, Under Pressure, the difference between toxic stress and stress, good stress that you impose sometimes on yourself in order to increase your productivity. And I think that's a really great way of looking at it at the end. And Serena can attest to this. When I was finishing the addiction inoculation, So rhythm wise with my books, I get super excited. I get super into the research. I get like very like, oh my gosh, this goes together with this thing. And look, oh my gosh. And I get to buy all the books and I'm, you know, if you looked over at my bookshelves, I have like sections for all the different topics and all that stuff with post-it notes on my bookshelves. That is like a high for me. And that's when my husband knows that we're going to be talking a lot in big picture stuff. And when we're out in our little wood-fired hot tub out in the backyard, we'll be talking about, ooh, what if I did this? And Tim has provided a bunch of breakthroughs. And then there's this middle, just really hard area of figuring out what the thing is. But then at the end, I get on kind of like a high, like especially when I hit flow. And I remember when I was handing in chapters for the addiction inoculation, KJ and Serena were like, oh my God, you could write a book in like a couple months if you kept up this pace. But it's like a blistering pace. And Tim knows I'm out at that point. Like I'm not contributing in a healthy way to my household, to my marriage, to my children's lives. I'm 100% in it because the whole entire thing is in my head in a very tenuous way. And the minute I put it down, I feel like all the pieces are going to fall apart. So that end slog, while it is professional, for me, it's also, I get a little high. I get like a rush. I get a whole like, you're in it, you're grooving, keep it up, keep it up, keep it up. Because if you stop, you may not get it back, which is also fun for me. So. But let's point out also that Serena is trying to do the hardest work on a book also while she's prepping to release a book, which if anyone's ever released a book, they know that the month leading up to the pub date, especially for me with nonfiction, it's like a lot of, you know, excerpts and things like that have to be placed. But there's a lot of stuff to do at the end. And sometimes that shiny object of putting something out in the world is more alluring than the hard work of getting the other thing put to bed. How are you balancing those two, Serena?
Well, I have been doing a lot of cheating somehow this month where I'm writing little snippets of books that could happen in the future that I might never write. So that's one little problem.
I saw something on Threads the other day where it's like something like the surest way to get yourself working on a book project is to have another one due, and you're actually working on this new thing because it sounds so shiny and lovely and wonderful and promising, but you really have to get the work done on the other thing.
Okay, in the last 7 days, this book is due to my editor, like, you know, now. In the last 7 days, I've written the first chapter of a thriller that I may never write, the first chapter of a novella that nobody is expecting, and and a bonus scene for a book published in like 2019.
Well, but I can just sense the urgency around those projects. That was very important work. If it were me, I would have very clean baseboards. I would have gotten down on my hands and knees to clean all of the floors in my house. And all the dogs would have had really thorough baths. So, you know, at least you're putting words on the page.
That's funny. I also vacuumed today.
Of course you did. Jenny, yeah, so when you have, I was going to ask Jenny, when you, you know, what's the advice you have for writers when they get to that stuck place and you're like, are you going to finish?
Yeah, it's really about that battle with perfectionism and what is good enough. And so the advice is usually set that deadline, put a stake in the ground for when it's going to be done. If someone's not expecting it, what are you going to do at that deadline? Are you going to send it to beta readers? Are you going to start pitching it? You know, having a thing that you're going to do. Because if you give yourself forever, you'll take forever. And it's that idea that it's never going to be. So here's the thing. People often, especially if they're writing their first book, they think, The powerful thing about a book is that it is an object that lives in time. We're all, you know, I'm looking at all the books behind you, Jess, and books behind me. They sit on the shelf. They're a thing you can hold in your hand. They're tangible. They're done. The author can't go back and tweak it in 5 years and say, oh, I could do a better job with this now. That's not the nature of a book. The nature of a book is it's finished. It's out there. It's akin in that way to a performance that happens on a stage where you're there in the moment watching this performance in this time and space. It's quite like that. And so finishing is saying this is going to live forever in this form. And that weight can be so heavy. So the advice is usually it's probably not going to be your only book. You have other chances to do a good job. You have other chances to put your ideas and thoughts on the page. And I think that relieves some of that perfectionism anxiety that, you know, it does feel like permanent. There's something permanent that gets into your head, and it's confronting that is helpful in moving past it, confronting reality.
For me, the other thing that has helped me for the past two books, and I, of course, didn't find this out until I did Gift of Failure, is knowing that when you record I'm going to record the audiobook for my books. And so when I read the book out loud, I have that very last moment to catch, you know, those little squeakers, you know, those little squeaky things that squeak in at the end. And then because I usually have a hardcover and a paperback, there's that one extra added little, you know, oh, maybe I can change it for the paperback kind of thing. But just as an example, I got an email through my website day before yesterday about something that someone thought I got wrong. But then I went and looked it up and it wasn't wrong. But it was the book came out 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago. And I got a note yesterday, day before yesterday, about a perceived mistake. And it's like, they were like, well, maybe in a future edition, you can change this or whatever. And it's just amazing. And as anyone will attest, you know, there's stuff I would do the Gift of Failure very differently today than I did it then. But I love the idea that some people talk about, like when your book gets optioned for film or whatever, it's once it's out there, it's no longer really mine. And I've talked in the past about the fact that someone came up to me at a reading or a signing or whatever and said, I really loved it when you said, and then she quoted me, except she didn't quote me. I never said that. But it was something that she really needed to get from my book. And so that's what she took from my book, but it's not even in my book. That was a moment when I said, oh, the book isn't about me anymore at all. It's about whoever's reading it and that thing that they need to hear at the right time or whatever. It's a very important process, I think, of letting go so it can become something else for other people.
I love that. That it, yeah, it's not yours anymore. And I think that's the fear of being done is it's not in your control anymore. And it's either going to get rejected by an agent, an editor, or the reading public, or it's going to be embraced. You don't know. And that not knowing can cause people to hold on to it. I'm curious, Serena, is do you think it would be hard to be in that finishing energy place if all you had to do was that one project? Or is it the presence of the other things or the other possibilities that's making it hard?
Yeah, I'm never really allowed to think about just one project at a time. And it would be so nice if I was, but I don't have that luxury. And I have basically just cemented that by signing up for a whole new book deal recently. And actually, I think it's messing with me a little bit. You know, like I've just promised the world, you know, a few more books and all of a sudden that seems heavy because I don't even get to start on it yet. Like I don't get to even satisfy the scary part of that yet. So.
But it also keeps you from being overly precious about your work. I mean, I think, you know, I hear from so many people. I was talking to a couple of editors about a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about a writer who just preferred to not publish their book than to make changes to their book. And, you know, at a certain point, you know, that's an extreme, but it's like these chapter summaries are going to come back from my agent. She's probably going to have a lot of changes. KJ made a joke this morning in text that I'm going to get them back. And she's going to say, nothing needs to change. They're perfect. And I'm like, oh, if only we could hold on to that fantasy. But there's something to be said about, you know, Serena, you're really great about it is your work. And I mean, you know, there's something creative and wonderful about all that stuff, but this is your work. And it keeps you from being overly precious about changes and about being able to look at your work for what it is and change it so that it can be what it is you and your readers want it to be. And I love that about you. It's very much a part of your, you get the work done. That's
well,
what
thank
this
you.
Is about.
Some months ago, I received a request to have coffee with somebody who was just about ready to submit for something. And I said yes, because, you know, it's nice to leave the house sometimes and I like people. And then she said, oh, and by the way, you read the first chapter for this at one point, and, you know, I still appreciate that. And I thought, I've lost it now. I don't remember this. And I went into my email and she was right. It was, I think, over 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I should say in this writer's defense that it was a huge scale of a project, you know, really hard. I have never written something on that scale. But that's why I didn't even remember, because she'd been working on it for a decade. And it's the kind of thing that would take you a decade. But yeah, and so I choose not to be that style of writer. It is a conscious choice, and I'm just confronted with that conscious choice every time I get to this stage in a book, and it's hard. And it doesn't help that I actually did write the wrong ending last week. I didn't do it. Like,
you know, how did you know? How did you know it was wrong?
Because the heroine didn't do that thing that she needed to do that was like her biggest issue. And I'm still wrestling with that a little bit. That the way that I set her up and her big wound that needs to, you know, that she needs to settle, she didn't run away at the end, which she's totally going to do. So I had to just, you know, go back and make her, the ending for her, be more true to her problem as a person, essentially. And I wasn't trying to cut a corner. I had a different idea for how it should all fit together in the end. And it's also that classic problem of I have two good ideas and I just for a couple days, just didn't want to choose, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And once I made that choice, it'd be over. The cards can only fall in a certain direction. The thing that I love about novels is that they are linear. You could stretch them out on a tape down the block. And that is something I very much appreciate. But man, sometimes it's hard to pick the next part of the thread and stick with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in the midst right now of finishing writing curriculum for a course that will be a year-long course in memoir writing for book coaches. And that idea that there's still choices at the end of where I could go and how much I could put in and what it's going to be, that's heavy for me. And I want it to be all the things, and I know it can't be all the things. And I like your idea of when you're finished, it feels inevitable that this was the way the cards were going to go and this was the path it was going to take. But even up until the very end, there's different directions that it can go. You're still making those choices, but it feels hard for me. Every day I'm doing the same thing you're all doing with different books, where I'm thinking, here's five other ways I could have presented this content that would have been better or more elegant or more linear or more better. And I'm constantly thinking I should just blow up this 9 months of work and make it something else. And so it's recommitting to your initial vision and recommitting to your why are you doing this? What did you want it to be? And that idea that it's going to feel inevitable someday doesn't feel like it now, but that's what gets me over that final hump. Is I love that image of you could lay it out on in a row, that it will feel like that when I'm done. I just have to make these final decisions to make it feel like that.
The hardest part for me, I think, is now that I'm so far out from Gift of Failure and I'm, you know, a couple of years out from the addiction inoculation, and I do so much speaking on these topics, I have created connections and put emphasis in places, different places than I did in the text. But boy, do I wish I could go back and say, oh, these two things fit together in a way I'd never thought about before. And it wasn't until, because I think I've mentioned this before, and when I do speaking engagements, I try to do one new thing every speaking engagement. Sometimes it falls flat and I say, okay, well, I won't use that again, but it was a quick, tiny little thing and it doesn't really mess with the overall scope. Or if it's something good, I'll use it again. And those things that are good that I often use again are how two things fit together, because I'm really proud of the fact that my speaking engagements have a narrative flow and an arc to them. And there are things I so wish I could go back in The Gift of Failure and say, oh, these two things really come together at a place where I could tell a whole other story or whatever. Luckily, the thing I'm working on right now, I really see as an extension of these first two books. So hopefully there will be ways for me to do that. But there's a lot to be said for talking things through with whether it's your accountability buddy or your writing partners or whatever, so that you can hear yourself say it out loud and realize either, oh, that's the wrong direction for me to go in. Serena and KJ have both talked about doing plot walks with people. Serena and like Sarah Stewart Taylor have done them together. Serena and KJ do them together, where you can talk things through without feeling like being worried about sounding stupid, but then also have these moments of, oh, wow, those two things, I never would have put them together in that way. So highly, highly recommend verbalizing, especially as you get towards the end, because then, for me anyway, it allows me to say, oh, wow, yeah, that connection needs to be highlighted. Maybe I just add a sentence back there that says, and as you'll see in chapter 9, da, 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 da. So, yeah.
Have either of you ever actually not finished? Is not finishing a real threat?
I mean, I have a novel that has what I think is a really killer first third that I do plan to finish someday. I have another novel that's a good first 40%. And I probably will finish that someday. But, you know, as we've talked about, that is not my favorite thing to write. So I don't know. We'll see. I've started the research on lots of books. In fact, I think I've mentioned this before. I have, my agent has seen proposals for books that I have decided that I don't want to spend a couple of years and then maybe even more time after that talking about them. So while I did, like, in fact, I'm looking over at my bookshelves right now, and I have 4 shelves full of books I bought for 2 entire books that I don't think I will ever write. But, you know, for me, that's fun. So,
what about you, Serena?
I have unfinished books. I have books where I got stuck, and they're not irredeemable. I just chose not to go after finishing those at that moment. And who knows whether that was a good decision. So
I love that story Stephen King tells about getting stuck in the middle of The Stand because there were just too many moving parts and too many characters. And so he just had to set off a bomb in the closet of one of the characters and kill off a whole bunch of them so that he could like see his way clear again. So maybe you just need to set a bomb off in some of those books, clear out some of your characters, that kind of thing.
You know, at this moment, I so wish that I was writing in a genre where I could do that. Yeah, that sounds really cathartic. You know, yeah. Today there are actually vultures circling my property and I'm trying not to see it as a metaphor. But yeah, that's so tempting.
Yesterday, that's funny you say that, because yesterday we watched a whole bunch with the 13 people that were here in my house for the eclipse. We watched 5 red-tailed hawks circling with about 8 turkey vultures. And they were clearly on to something like right over my property. And I had the same thought, like, what's so interesting going on here? What are they expecting during this eclipse? But do you guys have anything else you want to say about this topic before we start talking about what we've been reading?
No, I think we gave it its due and maybe we should decide that it's finished.
Okay. I love it. I love it. We're done. We set deadlines. We are at the 30-minute mark, so that's our deadline. So we're done. We're moving on now. Jenny, would you like to talk about anything you have read lately that you have found wonderful and delightful?
I just read a book that a gazillion people have read, which is Dear Edward by Anne Napolitano. And I took it on vacation. It was the perfect vacation book. And I didn't plan it this way. It's a story about a sole survivor of a plane crash, a young boy. And it's such an incredibly hopeful book, which was something I really needed. I found myself becoming a little bit afraid of flying the older that I'm getting. And what happened was I finished the book while I was on a plane. And it's where the ending, we get to finally see the crash. There's 2 timelines and they come together at the end. And it was so oddly calming and life-affirming. And I just absolutely loved it. So I was really sad it was over, and just one of those things where the serendipity of where I read it really dovetailed with my experience of it.
Cool.
I have not read her books, although they have been really recommended to me by many, many people.
Oh, I highlighted so many things in this book. I have to go back and look at what I highlighted and why. And I've now, this is a thing I do when I finish a book that I love, is I go and consume interviews and all the things with the author to get into their head a little bit. And that sense, that very hopeful sense of this, what seems like a very unhopeful story, was very much her intention. And I loved reading that. And just really positive view of the fact that we're all going to die was just a thing that I really, right now, really needed. I just really loved it.
Wow.
What are you reading, Serena?
I'm still here in genre fiction land and trying to figure out where I fit in the suspense market. And so I have been reading a series that is so unlike anything that I will ever write because I'm just not capable of writing like this. But the Orphan X series by Greg Hurwitz is so amazing. And I just read The Last Orphan and Lone Wolf, which are the last two, the 2023 and 2024 entries to this series. And there must be a huge story somewhere about why these are not already in film, because they are so perfect. Not only, so Orphan X is like an operative, like a Jason Bourne sort of character, which honestly, normally I would cross the street to avoid this sort of book. But it was recommended to me by my very smart friend, Amy, who has sort of like a good understanding of character. And, what, you know, when she recommends something, I always pay attention. And this character is so well drawn. So part of the fun of watching this guy operate is like, that's a lot of the narrative is this. It's watching him operate. He's smarter than you. He knows all kinds of things about ballistics and poison and all this stuff that I will never know and don't really have any interest in knowing. But the emotional arc of these books is so finely tuned. And this broken man, you know, trying to understand himself in a world of people that is nothing like him is just so well drawn that, you know, I think he's amazing.
Okay. Putting it on my list. Absolutely.
Same.
I'm in that weird place where I have three books that I'm reading at listening to at the same time, and for three very different reasons. So I kept not listening to Remarkably Bright Creatures by Shelby Van Pelt. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, how is an octopus the narrator? Like we had talked earlier about lessons in chemistry and how a dog is one of the narrators in this book and how well she pulled that off. And so I'm like, okay, this octopus thing, really interesting to me. And then there's a thing on TikTok right now about this kid who got this octopus and his dad did lots and lots of research on it. And they got the octopus and the octopus promptly laid eggs and which means the end of the octopus's life. They only live for like 2 years anyway. Apparently it's really hard to hatch babies in captivity and hardly anyone has done it. And so they decided to start hand feeding their octopus because the reason the octopus dies is that they won't leave the eggs and they starve to death. So, and then the eggs started to hatch and they have like 50 baby octopuses now, these people just out in Oklahoma. So anyway, I had octopuses on the brain. So I started Remarkably Bright Creatures. So far, love, love, love it. She's pulling, everyone has said this. It's sold a bajillion copies. It's great. And then KJ has been trying to get me to read this series by Claudia Gray. And I'm starting with the first book, which is The Murder of Mr. Wickham. And it's, the Jane Austen characters put in these retellings, murder mystery, sort of cozy murder mystery sort of settings that KJ loves. And it's delightful. And she's absolutely correct. And I'm having a blast. And then Joe Piazza was at Mom 2.0 and I was sitting next to her at the table and I realized I had my flight going home. And so I downloaded her brand new book, The Sicilian Inheritance, and I'm also loving that. So now I've got three books going at the same time that I really, really am enjoying. And the dilemma is, you know, finishing them all. But, you know, it's a nice dilemma to have three books going at the same time that you're really, really loving. The cool thing about Joe Piazza's book is that this The Sicilian Inheritance is about, it goes back to a story that some people in her family have told about some ancestors of those and a murder. And so Joe is trying to solve this murder through this novel. It's really cool. It's a really, really cool book. I really am enjoying it. The setup is fantastic. Her writing is good. I'm really enjoying it a lot. So I like having three books going at once. I know that drives some people crazy, but that's just my style.
I love that too.
Because you're in moods, you're in different moods for different things at different times, you know? When on my walk today, I might be in a Jane Austen kind of place. Who knows? I may not want to be in Sicily. I don't know. I don't know. We'll see.
So. You need finishing energy to finish reading books too.
Yeah. Well, and this is what's so fun right now is I'm deep in the headspace of the research thing for the new book. And so I'm in a nonfiction place with my eyeballs. So my ears are engaged in a fiction place, which is kind of fun too. I need a bit of a respite. Often when I'm really working hard on a nonfiction book, I'll also listen to my nonfiction research, but I'm maxed out right now. I can't do it. It's too much. So anyway, All right. Anyone have anything else? We good? We finishing?
We're finishing.
All right. Until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Save. Pause. Stop.
Thank you.